go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Well, he gets on punt. Close intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. That's how you get on board on the phones or on social media to chat with us for the next 1 hour to talk some Giants football and to talk about Super Bowl 49. I'm not going to sit here, guys, and rehash the final play call by Pete Carroll. We've heard that for 2 days. I was, in fact, tired of it about 2 hours after the game on Sunday night. We all know that in that situation, despite personnel advantages, your best player on the field is Marshawn Lynch. He had run the ball pretty effectively throughout that game. He had just gotten 4 yards on first down. You run the football there, you punch it in, so be it, you move on. That being said, I do think there are some subtleties here that some people are missing in those final moments of Super Bowl 49. Number one, when the Seahawks snapped the ball on that second down play, there were 26 seconds to go. They had one timeout remaining. Can you get off 3 rushing attempts with 26 seconds to go and one timeout? I think it's tight. Do you have to throw a pass in that situation in order to get 3 plays off? I think that's an interesting question. I think it's very tight. I'm not sure what the answer is. And does that mean the Seahawks maybe should have ran that play a little bit sooner? But if they run that play a little bit sooner, then you risk giving Tom Brady more time when the Patriots get the ball back to try to kick a field goal to tie the football game. Should Belichick have used that timeout? But if he uses the timeout, do the Seahawks then change their mind and run the football on second down? And then maybe the Patriots lose the game. So I do think there are some interesting time management questions in that final 30 seconds, 45 seconds, that a lot of people aren't talking about. But, look, you run the ball Marshawn Lynch. If it doesn't work, then you consider maybe play action or something like that on third down or fourth down. You go from there. But you got to get the ball to Lynch, and you cannot put the ball in danger in that situation. And as much as you want to kill the Seahawks offensive coordinator, and then you want to kill Pete Carroll, that's fine too. I get it. But I think Russell Wilson here has escaped a lot of the potential blame for this play. Now, was it a bad pass? Certainly not. It was much more of an excellent play by Malcolm Butler than it was a mistake by Russell Wilson. You see that type of play on the sideline all the time. The guy on the inside runs a little rub route to open up the slant for the easy touchdown. However, I will say this. If Wilson sees Butler breaking for the football there, and again, fantastic play. He took contact from the receiver, concentrated enough to still catch the ball and get the interception. All right? But if Wilson wants to be safer there, he should put the ball a little bit lower where it's probably not going to get picked off and maybe throw it a little bit less in front of his receiver who's going in for that slant route. Those are two of the things the quarterback could have done there to prevent that turnover. Because if it's an incomplete pass, so be it. Even if you throw it away, so be it. Then you have 2 plays remaining in one timeout. You can run the ball twice and try to get the ball into the end zone. I don't think Russell Wilson's taken any heat for the pass that he threw. Again, was it a bad throw? No. Could it have been thrown a little bit better and a little bit safer? Yes, I think it could have. Now that Jermaine Kearse play earlier on that drive gets lost to history. It gets canceled out. No one even talks about it anymore. And that would have went down with David Tyree, with Mario Manningham, and all those other type of plays. This Super Bowl played out so similarly to Super Bowl 42 was scary. When that ball was snapped on that Kearse play, there was almost exactly the amount of time remaining on the clock that there was when the Giants snapped the ball and Tyree made his helmet catch. You have the play earlier on the drive with Marshawn Lynch catching the ball on the sideline, beating Jamie Collins. Very similar to the Manningham play to start a drive to get a game-winning drive into position for the Seattle Seahawks. And, you know, it's just amazing how great of a game it was and how the Seahawks, quite frankly, had a lot of good fortune go their way to almost pull that game out and how much bad luck the Patriots had to pull that game out. I mean, Chris Matthews is a guy that, look, I'll be honest, I never heard of Chris Matthews. Unless he's on MSNBC hosting a talk show, I didn't know who he was. And we knew the Seahawks defense was going to match up well with that offense of the Seahawks. The Patriots defense has great secondary players. I didn't think the Seahawks players were going to get open. Well, give Seattle credit. They found a mismatch. They had Matthews on Arrington, a smaller guy. They took advantage of that. That's how Russell Wilson got his yards, folks. Big plays down the field to Matthews. They did not have these long, sustained drives with a lot of quick, short passes. No. They made big plays down the field. But now all that is lost because of what happened at the end of the game. A couple other things in this game that I don't think has gotten enough attention. 12 minutes to play in that fourth quarter. Patriots get the football on their side of the field. Seahawks have a 10-point lead. The Legion of Boom proceeds to allow two consecutive drives, one of 68 yards, one of 64 yards, 9 and 10 play drives, allows two touchdowns on two possessions, and the Seahawks lose the football game. This was, and rightfully so, considered one of the best defenses in the last 10, 20 years. They were fantastic. They were not in this game. And on those two drives, the Patriots only had to convert two third downs. They even had an offensive pass interference on that second drive. They managed to overcome that. So I think the Seattle defense need to take some criticism here. They did not play well. Not at all. And then you have, after that final play, the Patriots had the ball on the one-yard line. They can't afford a safety and give the ball back to Seattle. They have an offsides penalty on Michael Bennett. And the ball gets moved away from the goal line. And then in classy Seattle defensive fashion, they cause a fight on the following play. And one of their guys gets ejected. So the Legion of Boom did not live up to his reputation in terms of effectiveness on the field. They still play with that annoying chip on their shoulder that I can't take. And they look like fools at the end of the game. Honestly, the way they started that fight, clearly frustrated, don't like that. Richard Sherman on the sideline, worrying more about Darrelle Revis getting beat for a touchdown than trying to win the football game and the score. And by the way, Revis got picked off by an official on that play. So Richard Sherman needs to get his priorities straight. Now, I cannot say enough good things about the job Josh McDaniels did game planning this game for the New England Patriots. I didn't think the Patriots were going to be able to move the ball a whole lot on the Seattle Seahawks defense. The way their secondary plays, the way they come downhill, they make tackles after the catch. But this Patriot game plan was spectacular. That short passing game, whether it's to Edelman or Shane Vereen, or when they got the mismatches with Gronkowski outside on KJ Wright, they hit all the right buttons to move the ball up and down the field on the Seahawks. And in the first half, guys, the Patriots absolutely dominated. Up 14-0 with about 2 minutes to go, the Patriot defense then falls asleep, allows the Seahawks to get that last touchdown and drive down the field. But before that, the Patriots had outgained the Seahawks by more than 100 yards in that first half. It was a dominant performance. And I thought Tom Brady rightfully won the MVP. Despite the two picks, he put up 28 points on a great defense. And I think what he needs credit for, too, is after throwing those two picks and the Patriot offense was stagnating, it wasn't playing well in that third quarter. Everything was going wrong. They go down by 10 points. Similarly to how they went down 14 to the Ravens a couple weeks prior, two different times in that game. But Brady sticks with the game plan. He doesn't panic. He doesn't go away from the formula. And he gets those two late touchdowns to win the game. And I think, and look, you guys know, you listen to the show, no one's a bigger Peyton Manning proponent and fan than I am. This is, to me, what separates Brady above Peyton and puts him a step ahead. I don't know if Peyton would have done what Brady did in that game on Sunday night. I don't. And that's why I think Brady's a step above Manning in the pantheon right now. One other thing before we get to your calls on the game. I heard people at the end of that game saying, oh, now that the Patriots won, Brady's got to be considered maybe the best quarterback ever, four Super Bowls. And I think this speaks to how nonsensical our evaluation processes of quarterbacks sometimes. Brady had just led two straight touchdown drives to give his team a 28-24 lead. Why should an interception by Russell Wilson, by Malcolm Butler, affect what Brady's legacy is? Brady did what he had to do. He got his two touchdowns. He got his team the lead. Why should, whether or not he's the best quarterback of all time, I'm not saying that he is, but why should that be affected at all, by whether or not Malcolm Butler can pick off Russell Wilson on the goal line, and Pete Carroll doesn't call a running play, and Kearse makes a miracle catch, and Marshawn Lynch makes a great play down the sideline? Why should that have anything to do with Tom Brady's legacy? Brady did his job. He's off the field. He's not even in the game. Why should that affect whether or not Brady is considered the best quarterback of all time? It doesn't make any sense. And I think that's why people forget it's a team game. And yeah, the quarterback's the most important player. I'm not debating that. And wins and losses do matter. Not debating that either. But you need help. And Brady doesn't have that Super Bowl unless his defense gets that final stop. Or the Seahawks screw up and can't score. However you want to look at it. All right? And it's a team game. And you saw it there. And frankly, you need breaks too to win Super Bowls. That's another lesson you learn out of this game. The Patriots had gotten breaks in the past, whether it was the tuck rule. Now they got a break in this game with the Seahawks deciding to pass the ball on that play and not running it in. Yeah, that's a break. Sure it is. Likewise, the Patriots did not have a lot of luck against the Giants in 2007. But let's be honest, that Tyree play, Manning did a great job getting out of the sack, but that's a heave. It's heave. And it's a very fortunate catch. It's a great catch by Tyree, but it's a fortunate one. That's not exactly how Kevin Gilbride drew it up upstairs. All right? So you do need breaks to win Super Bowls, and nothing's wrong with that. It doesn't take anything away, but there is luck involved. And Jerry Reese mentioned that in his postseason press conference, that in order to get wins and get into the playoffs, you do need some luck. You do need some good fortune. And I don't think the Giants have gotten a ton of that the last couple of years, whether it's injuries or things on the field as well. Your calls, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to those as well over the course of the program. Talk about the Giants, the Super Bowl, whatever else you want to talk about. I should also mention very quickly the passing of Ann Mara on Sunday. Obviously a very heartfelt loss to the entire organization. Thoughts and prayers to the entire Mara family. Wonderful lady. I've only met her once or twice at a couple of very brief conversations. Absolute sweetheart. Firecracker. I mean, you saw her with Bradshaw after that Super Bowl. You know, that's who she is. And she loved the team. And, you know, as John Mara liked to joke, she was still the boss. And she was the boss. And everyone here knew she was the boss. And it's terrible to not have her with us anymore. So thoughts and prayers out to the Mara family, the entire Giants organization. She will certainly be missed here with us. 201-939-4513. Let's go to the phones and say hello to Drew in Virginia first. Drew, what's going on, pal?
Hey, Lance, how you doing, man?
It's John, Drew. Come on, man.
Man, you know what, man? I do that at times.
That's
man.
All right, Jim. What's John. Going on, dude? It's okay.
Hey, man, you know, I'm serious, man. I tend to do that. First and foremost, man, I did want to say also, man, condolences to the Mara family. I read about that, I believe it was Saturday.
Sunday morning.
I know I read it though online. But I was sad to hear. So condolences to the family. With regards to Seattle and the Super Bowl, man, I'm gonna have to disagree with you. From a standpoint, I mean, you know, yeah, we all had the coulda, woulda, shoulda. You know, Brady came back. He threw. He won the game. I mean, you know, he put the team ahead. You know, the Patriots gave up that touchdown with 46 seconds, I think, or 40-something seconds to go in the first half.
Yeah.
So it was a back-and-forth. My point is this. It was a back-and-forth tug, okay? You know,
sure.
One of those back-and-forth tugs.
Yeah.
However, at the end of the day, okay, is what I'm saying, because both teams had breaks, had bad breaks, had good and bad plays, both teams. But at the end of the day, okay, it came down to that horrendous what a nine call that the coaching staff did.
No, but okay? true, but it also came down.
Let me finish. Okay, that's the only way New England won that game. New England didn't win that game because, New England gets, they deserve their credit. Okay, they got the Super Bowl. They won the game.
And And remember, Drew, Malcolm Butler had to make the play. Malcolm Butler still had to make that play. How many times have we seen a defensive player not catch that ball?
John, you're right on that. We all understand that, okay? All right? But 99.9% of people, coaches, players, whoever you want to put in there, don't throw that ball.
I agree with that.
There is absolutely no reason whatsoever to throw that ball. And the explanation that Pete Carroll gave was asinine. Come on, man.
No. That's Drew, the reason he said what he said is that, look, like I said, you have 26 seconds and three plays and one timeout. Can you get off three running plays in that amount of time?
You got one timeout. You got second down. You got one timeout. You go, you make the running play. First and foremost, okay, I think we're kind of forgetting. It's not like Marshawn Lynch was completely shut down.
I think he had
102 yards.
Drew, I'm not saying it was a good play call. I never said it was a good play call.
Okay.
I would have ran the football, too. It was a bad play call. It was a bad decision.
Right, it was arguably one of the worst calls in the history of our sports.
No, see, Drew, here's where I disagree. Because if that's a regular incomplete pass and they run it on the next play, nobody cares.
Well, I mean,
nobody cares.
John, okay, I'm not going to disagree with you from that standpoint. You're 1,000% right. Okay, that we could go with the what coulda, woulda, shoulda. If they catch the ball, nobody's talking about this play. We get all of that. What I'm saying is this. Okay, the point that I want to make is this. All right, there is way too many bad things that can happen in that situation.
And I agree. That's why you run
things.
It. That's
okay,
why you run it.
Right.
No question.
Exactly.
I agree.
And good things. So that's all I was saying. All right. You know, I mean, I'll be flat out and tell you, I can't stand New England. I'm not a New England fan. I can't stand them. And I'll say that I also think they're cheaters. You know, but you know, whatever it is, they won. They got the game. But Seattle gave them that game, you know. And, I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous that you make a call like that. Other than that, man, I mean, yeah, it was a good game. Good game plan. And one other thing I'm going to make, and I'm going to let you go.
Yeah.
One other thing. I was listening to all of the announcers and everybody, and trust me, okay, we all know there was a ton of criticism, blah, blah, blah. But I was listening to Steve Young, and I think I'm pretty sure it was Steve Young who said that. He made the comment that a more seasoned quarterback would have checked out of that play. And I was kind of thinking that because I know a couple of years ago, and this goes back to, and let me make this comparison, okay? A couple of years ago when the Giants was playing the Philadelphia Eagles, all right, and all we needed to do was, we was in field goal range, and that's when Eli threw the ball, and I think it was Ramsey's Barden wind up getting a penalty.
Offensive pass interference, yeah.
Right.
Damn.
Okay. That play kind of reminded me of that from this standpoint, okay? You don't throw the ball in that situation. You already got the game. But what does Eli do? He throws the ball. When I called in about the show, I kind of felt like, why did Eli throw that ball? And in this instance, I blamed Eli because I felt like Eli was a veteran quarterback and he should have checked out of that play. On this play with Russell Wilson, I personally don't think Russell Wilson deserves the criticism, okay? Because he's doing what his coach tells him. This guy's young. He's not a rookie, but you know, and he wasn't a big game last year. But you know, he's young in his career.
Hi, Drew.
I'm thinking a veteran quarterback is checking
that's
out.
Fair.
That.
That's fair.
That's what I want to say.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, man.
Thanks, buddy. And you know what? Here's the thing. I think I'm not going to get on Russell Wilson for not checking out either. And here's why. Once you have that personnel on the field with the three wide receivers and the Patriots stick in their goal line package, you can't run the ball there because you're probably not going to get in because you don't have the numbers. You know, because they have their goal line personnel, you have three wide receivers, it's probably not going to work. So I'm not going to kill Wilson for not checking out of it either. Time's an issue there too, getting out of the play with the clock. I don't know what the when they got to the line, how much time is left on the play clock. And on the game clock, for that matter. So I'm not going to kill him for not getting out of the play, because once you're in that personnel and the Patriots don't go into nickel and they stay in their goal line, as a quarterback, you can't go into a running play there when you're not going to have the personnel to run that effectively. I think the issue comes with them going with that three wide receiver personnel in that situation. And look, I know people are calling it the worst play call of all time. Look, it's a bad play call. It's a bad, bad play call. I get that. But how many times have we seen that plan, that little slant go incomplete? You know, maybe Russell Wilson should have thrown it away. Throw it lower, closer to the ground, where only his man can get it. He's short, though. Could he have done that and gotten it over the line of scrimmage? I don't know. That's a great question. To me, it was as much of a great play by Malcolm Butler as it was a bad call. To read that route for an undrafted rookie and get there and beat the wide receiver and catch that ball even with the contact, that to me is a grade A, 10 out of 10, A++++ play. And if that's incomplete and the Seahawks run it and they win the game on the next play, nobody even remembers the fact that they threw the ball on first down. 201-939-4513. Chris in Bayonne is next. Chris, what's going on, pal?
John, I just want to express Happy New Year to the New York Football Giants. The Super Bowl is over, so it's a new year for us now.
That's right. Well, anyway, let's get ready for 2015 and turn things around.
It's official now. Here we go. In the Super Bowl, number one is Ann Mara. I met her once. She was a wonderful lady.
Yes.
What a spirit she had.
Yep.
And I just loved her in the face with Joe and Bradshaw after the Super Bowl. She's a real class act and a real matriarch to the Mara family. And my heart and condolences goes out to the whole entire family.
I appreciate that, Chris. What else you got?
All right. The Super Bowl. There's always a play during the game. It always comes down to one or two plays.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk about the last interception because everyone's talking about it. But I thought when they were up by 13 points and Curse drops the ball, that was a big hit.
Oh, you know what?
They win the game after that play.
Chris, you're 100% right, and I should have brought that play up in the open. It was in my notes. I must have skipped over it by accident. That play was, and that was a heck of a throw by Russell Wilson. You know, I I've been critical of him before, but he was very accurate on his deep passes in this game. And he threw the ball down the field extremely well. He put that right over his shoulder in his hands. That's a ball you got to catch, and that could have changed things in the fourth quarter. No question about it.
Oh, they would have been Super Bowl champions. Number two, I'm just going to talk about the draft real quick.
Sure.
I'm liking defense over offense in the first pick, but I have no problem with a safety, the kid Collins. I really don't. And he's got a lot of talent, and I think we need a safety bid. But defensive line, safety, or offensive line is my choice. Well, what would you pick if you were picking? I know it's early, but that's what being a fan is all
of course.
About. We can speculate, John.
Look, I don't have a problem with either one of those three positions, O-line, D-line, safety. I'll even throw linebacker into the mix. I think those are the four positions you're probably targeting with that first pick. Everything I've read about Landon Collins, and I'd like to see what his numbers are at the combine on his shuttle time, on his 40-yard dash, and things like that. He's more of a run box guy than he is a coverage guy on the back end. And in these days, I would much rather have a smaller safety that can cover than a guy that's going to give run support. So
makes sense.
So I would wait and see what his combine numbers are. Then I'll come to a better conclusion on what Collins can do and what he can't do. But based on his film and tape at Alabama, much more of a line of scrimmage guy than a cover guy. Honestly, if you can get, and I know this is not meant to be a cop-out, I think your need up front on defense and your need up front on offense are almost of equal importance. So let's see what we do in free agency. Let's see where the Giants go, where they improve in free agency. Then you'll see where the bigger need in the draft might be.
Yeah,
but
if you get
real quick question, if you get to it and you say, well, we have an offensive lineman we really like, we have a defensive lineman we really like, but we think one of the two has a better chance of being a great player, I would just pick the guy that you think has the better chance of being a great player. In that case, you let the best player available make you pick between the two. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was just scouring over the NFC playoffs. A real quick comment. You go back to the Dallas flag, right? The Dallas no flag. Detroit loses the game. Then you go to the next game, okay, with Dallas, a touchdown but no touchdown. And then you go to Green Bay, the way they lost the game with a play at the end of the game on an onside kick. And then you go to the Seattle Super Bowl, and it's an interception
right.
on a bad call. What a what a what a line of crazy events in football in four straight games.
And it's funny.
With that, I'll let you comment, John.
Now, Chris, you're 100% right, and thanks a lot for the call, bud. Every team that caught the break the week before ended up losing the week after. It was like a huge domino effect in the NFC. It's funny you brought that up. I was in a conversation about somebody with that either Sunday night or Monday morning. I forget which day it was. And they made that same exact point. Every NFC team that caught the break, if you want to call it a break, lost the following week. And look, the Seahawks and the Patriots, it was a pick'em game. And I think it turned out that both teams were pretty evenly matched, to be quite honest with you. And the game played out that way. And one big play, bad decision here or there, ended up being the difference. And look, that's what football's all about, man. What else could you ask for from a Super Bowl than that? Just fantastic game. Ton of fun to watch after, you know, last year's blowout and utter debacle. Back to the phones. Jordan is out in Colorado Springs. Jordan.
Hey, John, how's it going?
What's going on, man? I'm guessing you're in the military, Jordan?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for your service and thanks.
Carson, been a New Yorker, born and raised in the Bronx, huge Giants fan. Was in Iraq for both Super Bowl wins, so missed out on the parades.
Well, Jordan, Jordan,
first off,
go ahead. No problem. Just want to say thank you very much for your service and thank you very much for listening. Go right ahead.
Hey, likewise. Thank you. First off, you know, condolences to the Mara family. Huge loss. And also, congratulations to Odell Beckham Jr. and the awards that he brought home this weekend.
Yes.
Hats off to him. Can't wait to see him and Victor Cruz line up together in the offense next year. I think that's going to be awesome.
No, that'll be great. And you know what? It's funny, Jordan, I that kind of got lost in the mix. The fact that Beckham won that Rookie of the Year. Completely got lost in it between, the passing of Ann Mara and then the Super Bowl. You know, the Beckham thing kind of got whitewashed a little bit. And over the next few days,
right,
we will have a lot of stuff on Giants.com about Beckham winning the award and his rookie year. So make sure you stay tuned for that.
Definitely. Hoping to see him and Victor Cruz line up together next year and really make some headway.
No doubt about it.
Now, down to the Super Bowl, I got to be honest. Being out here in Colorado, it's kind of funny. Everybody out here is either a Broncos fan or a Seahawks fan. And it seems like whenever the Broncos lose, everybody turns into a Seahawks fan. It's kind of funny. But I got to be honest with you. You know, I should have put money on this game, man. Everybody I spoke to had the Seahawks winning. I even called the score. And I was like, look,
wow,
this is the Patriots. You know, I went with the Patriots. Everybody, how are you going to go with the Patriots? You're a Giants fan. This, that, and the third. I was like, look, man, I got to be honest. The Seahawks did what they did last year, and it was great. It was phenomenal. They smashed the Broncos, just completely embarrassed them in the Super Bowl. But they're a young team. That was their first time in the limelight, and they got lucky. They did what they did. They played their game plan, and it worked out for them. They're a young team, and for them to be right back in the spotlight the next year, I felt like their heads were too big for the game. You know what I mean? Like, they're going back to what you said about Legion of Boom playing with that chip on their shoulder. You know, I got to be honest. A lot of those guys, I see them as a fan. I see them as cocky. I see them as, you know.
I agree.
And quite frankly, I think they got what they deserve. You know, they came into the game. They figured they were going to repeat, and it wasn't going to be an issue. But when you play against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, you cannot get caught sleeping at all. Like, for the slightest bit. And the play call at the end is not the only reason why the Seahawks lost the game. You know, the two drives that he talked about with, the Patriots putting up those two consecutive scores in the fourth quarter, that right there was a huge momentum shift.
Yeah.
You know, and the play call, definitely horrible. I mean, I don't care what the situation is. I think there's a million other things you could do. You're on the biggest stage. It's not a regular season game. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it was a regular season game, then maybe I could see that play call. I could see the logic, you know. I think they were trying to make – they lost. They did, for some reason, they did not put the ball in their number one offensive player, ball carrier, just Marshawn Lynch. Like, that dude is a beast. I wish he'd wear a Giants uniform.
Well, you know, Jordan, another thing, too, and how about this? And I kept tweeting this during the game, and I ended up being wrong. We didn't see Russell Wilson keep the ball on a zone read once the entire game. That's something that's worked for them all year long.
Yeah,
how did
definitely.
We not see that play once?
Yeah, I know. And I was completely surprised. Like, Marshawn Lynch and the ability for Russell Wilson to extend plays and extend drives on his feet, that is makes the Seahawks offense completely dynamic, because you don't know what to prepare for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't know what's coming. You don't know if it's going to be the run. You don't know if it's going to be Wilson on his feet. You don't know if he's going to cut you up with his arm. You know what I mean? Like, that is what makes them so dynamic. That is what makes them so hard for defenses to prepare for. But the fact that they strayed away from that, like, why would you're on the biggest stage? This is a championship game. This isn't a regular season game where you could try a new game plan, try something new. You know what I mean? I mean, and, you know, Pete Carroll, yeah, okay, he took responsibility. But I think it's more than that. I think they wanted to go with that play because they wanted it to work. They wanted Wilson to complete that pass and make it a touchdown.
Well, of course.
Wilson's the golden boy. He's their golden child. And, you know, he comes out as a hero, gets the MVP and everything else. But it didn't work out that way. It blew up in their face. And you know what? The 20 seconds left on the clock, irrelevant. Completely irrelevant because they bled the clock. They took their time getting back to the line.
That's true.
And they took their time to snap the ball. They could have had 33 seconds left with one timeout and
could have
ran nothing but runs, but they decided to bleed the clock. They were playing They were playing the clock game, and it blew up in their face.
Now you're right. Jordan, thanks for the call, bud. Appreciate it. And look, you're 100% right. They could have snapped that ball a lot sooner than they would have easily had time for three runs if they wanted to do it that way. No question about it. But then if you score on the first play, what happens? Brady's got more time to try to come back and get that game-tying field goal. Now, the Patriots had really had these long, time-consuming, short-pass dink-and-dunk drives. Could they have gotten down fast enough to kick that field goal? I honestly don't think so. Then again, your defense had just given up two touchdowns if you're the Seahawks. So I think the way you manage the time in that final 45 seconds is actually really interesting from both perspectives. If you're Belichick, should you have definitely called that timeout? And if you call the timeout, then did the Seahawks run the ball and you lose? Even though at that time, I was saying to the TV, Belichick's got to call a timeout. Well, it actually worked out that he didn't. Because then the Seahawks felt maybe they had to pass once to get in enough plays with the time remaining. So I think it was just a very interesting dynamic at the end of the game. 201-939-4513. Eric's in San Diego. Eric, you're up next.
Hey, I just want to say it's pretty hard being a Giants fan in San Diego.
Well, you know, Eric, you're right, and I think it's kind of funny, actually. If you watch that Super Bowl, I feel like the Patriots really took a page out of not only what the Chargers but what the Cowboys did offensively against that Seahawk defense. A lot of those short passes to running backs, short passes over the middle, and that's how they move the football. And, you know, the Chargers did a good job against that Seahawk defense earlier this year, and I think that was one of the things that the Patriots copied when they won that game in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think that they just played their game. I mean, they saw what worked in the regular season and throughout the season against the Seahawks.
Yeah.
And I think they figured, you know what, might as well do that if it works on them then.
Yeah, you know, everyone has this, you know, feeling that the Seahawks run this, oh, this bump and run, man-to-man defense, you know, press coverage, this and that. They don't. They run a lot of zone, cover three type of stuff, and if you can get some of your quicker athletes, whether it's a slot receiver or a running back, on those linebackers in the middle of the field, you can make some plays against them.
Yeah, and I think that the Legion of Boom, they're very capable of a lot. But
oh, sure, they're great.
Yeah, Richard Sherman, though, I'm not sure about him being the best because he only plays on one side of the ball. I mean, if you're going to be the best, you got to be versatile in the defensive back area.
No, look, you're right. And if you want to take a shot at Richard Sherman, I think that's the shot you take. He doesn't always match up with the other team's best wide receiver. He doesn't go to both sides of the field. And again, you know, he has two great safeties behind him, too, to help him out. Not to say that Richard Sherman's not a great corner. He is. If I had to pick who the best corner was in the league right now, I mean, the Harris kid in Denver has been really good this year. Patrick Peterson in a down year, so I take him out of the equation. Revis is still very, very good. I would definitely put Sherman right in the conversation with the best, probably top three. But, you know, I think it's a fair conversation to have. Sherman's definitely one of the favorites, though, for being best corner in the league.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's plenty of other corners in the league. Yeah, he's a good, great athlete to be out there. I mean, he came from the bottom. He had a lot to go through life in order to get to his spot, but there's a lot of great other DBs out there, such as Cam Chancellor. Honestly, I think Cam Chancellor should have covered Gronkowski up top. They knew they were going to get to him at some point in time, but, I mean, there was a lot of mistakes in that game that the Seahawks should have clicked to.
Yeah, well, yeah. How they decide to use Chancellor rather than manning up with him, they wanted to put him in the middle of the field and try to cut down on some of those little slants and crosses that the Patriots are running to try to tackle him after the catch. It didn't work, and that's how you wind up sometimes with the linebacker KJ Wright outside on Gronkowski, which clearly did not work out well for the Seahawks. And a great job, by the way, by Josh McDaniels setting up his formations and setting up the offense and Brady recognizing it to create those mismatches.
Yeah. Well, honestly, that wasn't very smart of the Seahawks to put KJ Wright up there with Gronkowski. I mean, one, he's smaller than him. Gronkowski's I wouldn't want to cover him alone. I mean, he's faster than KJ Wright. Everything. He's physically better than KJ Wright.
Well, right, but it's not like they had KJ Wright on him all game. And occasionally, based on personnel, at some point you're going to have to put a linebacker on the tight end. I mean, that's just the way it goes. If you want to rotate your defenses, eventually you're going to get a linebacker on him. And it just so happened that on some of the plays where they got the linebacker on Gronkowski, those are the plays they had Gronkowski split out wide, which makes it a lot more difficult to help out in those type of situations.
Yeah, and I think the secondary should be able to recognize that and be like, hey, there's we have our linebacker on Gronkowski, excellent tight end, and we should maybe, I don't know, spy him up top.
No, I think that's fair.
Just give him a helping hand.
I think that's fair. I appreciate the call, my friend.
All right, thank you.
Good stuff, and I think that's a good point. Once you do see that mismatch, there has to be some type of adjustment you can make up top where you can maybe help out that linebacker because Gronkowski, I mean, you saw it. I mean, I called that out all three times, I think, before the play happened where, you know, I was talking to my brother, a couple other friends that were watching the game with us, and I'm like, guys, look, that's a one-on-one tight end with the linebacker. They're going to Gronkowski. I mean, everyone knew they're going to Gronkowski. I mean, KJ Wright, he's a good player. He didn't have a chance. It's not his fault. I mean, that's just a mismatch. And that's why Gronkowski is who he is, by the way. That's why he's probably the best tight end in football. Him and Jimmy Graham, take your pick. Dre in Atlanta at 201-939-4513 on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Dre, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Big John Studd? How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Dre. How are you? You're going old school with the Big John Studd. I like it.
Well, definitely. Yeah, let me preface first by, you know, wishing a merry fair and family my condolences. You know, her passing hit me just as hard as when we lost the ball. So, you know, our prayers are with the family.
No question about it.
I'm probably one of the rare Giant fans out there that, you know, wanted New England to win. You know, I didn't like Seattle, nor did I like New England. But those two Giant Super Bowls are the two black eyes in that franchise's eyes. So I'd rather sit down there and be the only NFC team to beat them in the Super Bowl, not once but twice, you know, in heroic fashion, than to share that with a team that I really don't like.
You know, Dre, I was torn about it. You know, and I said this last week. You know, Seattle annoys me. Their defense especially, I think they're very chatty. And this is not Russell Wilson's fault. I think he's a good guy, and I think he's a good player. But it annoys me when people try to call him, you know, and put him on the same level as a Tom Brady. He's just not there yet. He could get there, but he's not there yet. So that bothers me. Then you have the Patriots with the whole cheating stuff. That bothers me. Brady's obviously annoying. Belichick can be annoying. I get all that. Then again, I think the whole deflation thing was completely overplayed and not nearly as significant as people made it out to be. So that got on my nerves a little bit. I didn't know who I was going to root for, but over the course of the game, I felt like part of me, the same way you feel this way, wanted the Patriots to win, only because I thought they were maybe the better team. But I was really torn both ways, to be honest with you. I didn't really have a rooting interest in the game.
See, I did too going into it, but when it kept showing, you know, highlights of our Super Bowls, I was like, yeah, you know, without the Giants, they've been talking about, you know, Tom Brady with 6 Super Bowl rings.
You're right. I'll tell you what, and Brady played, you know, close to well enough in both those games to win those games, but the Giants made the plays they had to make at the end of those games in order to win.
Right, and until we meet again in the Super Bowl, he's still going to have that hang. Both Belichick and Tom is going to have that hanging over their heads. But I do have one thing. You know, it seems like all Giants coaches, you know, start out with the franchise, leave off and have success elsewhere. So do you think that we'll get Devin McCourty? Because I could see the Giants getting an offensive lineman in the draft and going in a free agent and getting a defensive lineman. But, you know, with Antro still up in the air, you think they'll try to make a run at Devin McCourty?
I think that's the type of player that you make a run at. I don't know about him specifically, to be honest with you. Free agency hasn't started yet, so I don't think they're that far along. But I do think that type of cover safety is the type of guy you want anchoring that secondary. And there's one thing, too, about Steve Spagnuolo's defense. He needs a smart safety back there to line everybody up. If you remember back in 07, James Butler was a guy that, you know what, he wasn't the fastest guy. You know, he made some physical mistakes in coverage. You know, he wasn't the most athletic guy in the world, but he was smart. And he lined guys up, and he made sure Spagnuolo's defense, which can be a little complex, was executed properly on the back end. So you need somebody like that at safety to fill that role for the Giants.
I agree. I agree, because I was just looking at it, and I know in Giants history, our offensive line, you know, they pretty much had the longest tenure of battle mates out of all the positions was that offensive line. So I can see them going in the draft and getting either a tackle or a guard, and going into free agency and this year and getting a tackle, a defensive tackle, and then next year trying to find, you know, hopefully the pool is thick and getting a defensive lineman, or if they can't get a up to par one in the second round. But I don't, you know, I think right now, even though no one wants to say it, I could see us rebuilding for the long haul instead of that, you know, that cliche, that win now. Yeah, we want to win now, but we're still looking at longevity. Just because we want, just to say, hypothetically, we win the Super Bowl next year, I don't think the Merrill family wanted to end there. I think they want to create their own dynasty, and the only way you do that is with youth, by having players that have been together long term, that understand each other, you know, and start building it that way.
Well, you know, and I think that's how they're trying to build it. You know, they have young players here that are going to make up, that have been drafted the last, you know, 2-3 years, that are going to make up the core of this team moving forward on offense. You know, guys like Cruz, guys like Odell Beckham Jr., the two offensive linemen you picked in the first and second rounds the last couple of years. Obviously, Eli Manning's going to be here for a long time. Maybe Larry Donnell can become part of that core. Andre Williams, Rashad Jennings. Then on defense, you know, not quite as large because you have a lot of young guys still, but Hankins and JPP up front. Dominique Rogers, Camardi, and Prince can be the part of that core in the secondary. Devon Kennard, a guy, is a guy I think that could become part of that core. So I think that's exactly what they're trying to do. I appreciate the call, my friend. Yeah, no problem. 201-939-4513. Brian is in St. Louis next. What's going on, Brian?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Brian. What's up with you, pal?
Just want to say, you ready for another 6 weeks of a winter?
By the way, I had no idea that these groundhogs were such, like, vicious creatures. They're, like, biting people all over the place now. I mean, these groundhogs are apparently pretty vicious, but I have a feeling that we're going to get at least one or two more snowstorms before the season's out, unfortunately.
Well, I know we'd love to see some out here. We haven't seen much.
Oh, don't ask for it, man. Don't tempt fate like that.
With the Legion of Boom, you know, everybody was kind of down on them, letting Brady, you know, march down the field in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, that started with the week before that, with the injuries to Thomas and Sherman, and then their nickelback breaking his arm. I mean, that just left the secondary weak and sore and tired, where Brady just picked him apart.
Was that Chewbacca?
Yeah, that was my real name.
Okay, I was wondering what. I thought I heard Chewie back there. I wasn't sure what it was. Now, look, you're 100% right. And frankly, I thought going into the game that the Legion of Boom was going to have a lot of success against Brady. You know, he doesn't have that, you know, big-time wide receiver that's going to beat you over the top. He relies on those short passes and then can get run after the catch. And the Seahawks are such good tacklers, whether it's the safeties or the corners or the linebackers. These guys are all great tacklers in the open field. And I thought the Patriots would catch a bunch of 2- and 3-yard passes and then get tackled right away. But they were able to catch the passes in space and then gain another 3 or 4 yards after the catch. And that's what really ended up killing the Seahawks.
Well, you had, you know, Sherman with an elbow, Thomas with a shoulder.
That's true,
Chester
too.
With his knee.
Yep.
And then the guy breaking his arm. That just, I mean, we know that from this year with injuries to the defensive backs that it hurts.
No, you're right. And you know what? I should have brought up the injuries before the show, or rather when I started the show. You're 100% right. And I'm sure that did affect their ability to tackle on those little short passes after the catch. I think that's more than fair. In fact, you didn't really hear a whole lot from Earl Thomas at all during the game. I mean, he had that one late hit unnecessary roughness penalty, which, by the way, I thought was a little bit circumspect. I'm not sure if that was really – I'm not sure if he hit him late long enough after the play was over to get flagged for that. I thought that was borderline. But you didn't really hear much from Earl Thomas during the game.
And just one other thing. I'll take your answer off the
air.
Yeah,
sure.
But, you know, this draft coming up, I don't see the Giants going sexy and picking, you know, some big name. I see them going offense, defensive line. I'd like to see them go defense, maybe stick with some boys from those Washington, the defensive lineman and the linebacker. Both are looking good, and both would help fit some needs.
Well, I'll tell you
you just have a great day, and I'll talk to you next time.
Hey, you too, Brian. Thanks for calling in, pal. And look, a defensive lineman pick can be a sexy pick. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney's a sexy pick. I mean, he was top player in the draft last year. And again, the Giants aren't picking first overall. They're not going to get Jadeveon Clowney. I get that. But you can pick a defensive lineman that's a difference maker. I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul, in retrospect, sexy pick. I mean, he's a difference-making type of player. You know, a pass-rushing defensive end can be just as important as a big-time wide receiver. Well, maybe not quarterback, but a huge playmaker. You know, JPP can be that difference maker, like he was the second half of this season, like he was back in 2011. So, a defensive lineman can be a sexy pick. And go ask the Cowboys if an offensive lineman can be a sexy pick. You know, Zach Martin helped transform their entire offense in that running game. So maybe at the time, fans don't get all excited that, you know, it's a, you know, Beckham guy that's going to make all these one-handed catches and do something crazy and, you know, wow the fans and all that stuff. But in the end, affecting wins and losses, a great player is a great player no matter where he is. And if the Giants get a pass-rushing defensive end that can stop the run, if they get that monster defensive tackle that's out there that, you know, stuffs the middle and, you know, plays like Sue or Haynesworth, or if they get an offensive lineman that, you know, turns this power running game into something that can be effective game in, game out, guess what? It's going to be sexy. People are going to get into that. They'll get excited. You know, the Giants are a big blue team, a black and blue type of team. Stop the run, run the ball, dominate the line of scrimmage. That's what fans want to see just as much as they want to see one-handed catches. So go find the guy that's going to make the biggest difference. I don't care where he plays, and go get him. 201-939-4513. Joe in Pennsylvania is up next. Joe, what's going on, pal?
Hi, Lance. With the Super
Bowl, John,
Joe,
it's John.
I was very happy New England won there because I've been hearing a lot, Brady being the greatest quarterback of all time and Belichick the greatest coach. And I have to look at it and see, hey, the Giants were the only team really to ruin these big greatest coaches, you know what I mean, with their were two Super Bowl wins. And I look back at the films there of Belichick there when he was our defensive coordinator. He looks like a young kid in high school. You have to really see the films of him there, you know.
No, you're right. Hey, look, Joe, I will say this. Look, Brady is no doubt about it in the conversation for best quarterback of all time. Bill Belichick, no question, in the conversation as one of the greatest coaches of all time. Probably the greatest coach of this era. However, and I'm putting Deflategate to the side because to me, I'm not saying it's a non-story, and if they found out that they did something purposely, they should be fined, they should have a draft pick taken away, and they should be punished. But I don't believe, in my opinion, that had a big effect on the result of games, in my opinion. However, Spygate's a different story, and they were proven to have cheated. So that, to me, does put a black mark that cannot be erased over the head of both of those guys. Fair or not, it just does. So that, to me, does make a difference when you, everything is said and done, you evaluate the careers of both Belichick and Brady. Joe? Hello, Joe. Joe, call us back. I'll put you right back on. I guess we lost you. If you want to give us a call back, I'll pop you right back on. I'm sure he had more to say than just that. 201-939-4513. John down in Washington, D.C. Johnny, how's the weather down there? Did you guys get hit with snow over the last couple weeks or no?
No, we had flurries. That's about it. Just flurries. Nothing sticking.
Very good. Yeah, because
sun is all outdoors out here now.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, because I have been down in D.C. when it snows. You guys do not handle that weather very well.
We don't. We don't. That's because D.C. is so congested. We really don't.
What do you got for me, John?
John, I called to let you know that I don't care how many excuses Seattle made. That was the worst call ever.
It was,
I'm sorry. No
matter
how you
call.
Chop it up, John, if they had three receivers on, They didn't change their goal line, you know what I'm saying, defense. It was the worst call ever.
No, John, you're right. And the problem comes with the fact that Seattle did put in three wide receivers. Why are you putting three wide receivers in the game when you should play power football and run it in? I agree with you. But to say it's the worst call ever, and this is why I roll my eyes a little bit at that. No, I know. I hear you. But if that's an incomplete pass and not an interception, and they run it in on one of the next two plays, nobody cares.
I mean, that's true, too. I mean, I don't know. I probably pay attention to ask myself, even if it was incomplete. I know I would ask myself, why would you do that?
No, and that's fair. 100% fair.
I would ask myself, like, why would you do that?
Right.
We could just end it right now. But, John, I also called to say this. I really respect what that fan said, because believe it or not, I do not like the Patriots at all. I do not like
Nobody
the
does.
Seahawks. And I agree with what that fan said. I refuse to share our glory with any other champ as far as beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Like, do you know how often we would have been compared to the Seahawks with the guy catch and then Marshawn Lynch running in for a touchdown and they end up winning?
100%.
We would have been compared to our catches, the beating Brady would have been compared to the Seahawks for a lifetime. So I have to agree with what the fans say. I'm not happy to pass one, but I'm not too disappointed because the catch that the guy made down the sideline was spectacular. It was amazing.
And it's funny, it's fun, John, watching that live, because I saw it was deflected, and I watching live, I thought I saw the ball hit the ground. I think his legs might have been blocked out by the photographers on the sideline, and I thought it hit the ground. And then when they showed the replay, I'm like, oh, man, that hit his leg. That never hit. It was an unbelievably lucky catch, to be quite honest with you.
It was. It was. And also, John, I was talking to another Giants fan of mine. He was talking about when Victor Cruz come back. With Victor Cruz next season, he comes back with Odell Beckham. Do you think it'll be, some type of conference that, you know how NFL wide receivers are. They want their catches. And being as though how great both players are, you know what I'm saying, do you think it'll be any type of controversy between Victor Cruz and Odell Beckham?
Honestly, I don't, and that's because of the type of guys both guys are. I think, honestly, what matters most to both guys is winning. And and this is what I've seen after the game. I've had the pleasure, and it just so happens that it's worked out this way, where Bob Papa and I always go into the locker room after the games on the radio and do our post-game show, right? And Bob always gets Eli Manning, and it just has worked out that I've gotten Beckham after, I'd say, 90% of the games he's played in. And even after these games where he is, 9, 10 catches, 140 yards, 2 touchdowns, one-handed catches and all this stuff, if the team loses, he's down, depressed, and dour. Not to say he doesn't give a good interview and he's not very polite to me. He is. But you can tell he's mad. And he was much happier after a game where the team won and his numbers weren't maybe quite as good than he was after a game where his numbers were great and the team lost. So
That makes sense.
And Victor's the same exact way. Victor's not a me numbers guy. So I don't think either guy is going to, take the stance where they're going to complain and bitch and be annoyed that they're not getting the ball enough. I don't see it with those guys.
Right. I really don't. Now, John, I'm going to ask you one more question, and I'll let you go. Now, when both come back, who do you double the next season? Do you double Victor Cruz, even though he's just coming off a knee injury, or you double Beckham? I'll take the answer off the air.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. And that's the beauty of it. Your opponent's got to pick their poison. It's like 2011. Who you double, Cruz or Knicks? Well, when were they double, you go to the other guy. That's the beauty of it. When you have two weapons out there. Go ask Matt Ryan when he had Roddy White when he was still in his prime and Julio Jones. You got to pick your poison. I mean, that's a great situation to be in. And, of course, you hope Victor Cruz gets back 100%. Now, I'd be surprised if Cruz is his super explosive self right at the start of the year. This is a very serious injury. He could build up to that. And I think he will with his work ethic and the way he goes about things. But to expect Cruz to look like himself right away in training camp in the preseason, it might take a little bit of time. Now, maybe Cruz will heal extremely well, and that's not the case, and he'll come back and he'll be great right away. We'll see. But just keep in mind, this is a very serious injury, nearly or if not as serious as an ACL. So let's not put too much pressure on him to get back too quickly. You want him to take his time and do it the right way. 5 minutes, 2 calls. Joe in Pennsylvania is back. Joe, sorry about that. What's going on, man?
I just wanted to say there to
I think we might be the only team that has four Super Bowl wins in the last four decades. I'm not sure. The 80s, 90s, 2000, and 2011. There,
I believe,
you know,
that is correct, actually. Yes, I think I have heard that stat before.
So we're sort of spoiled, and I'm hoping that Andre Williams can turn into our Lynch there. You know, the way he runs here, you know, and they really did blow it. I was surprised that they did not go play action there in the Super Bowl there, at least, you know, instead of just getting the ball and throwing that slant. I mean, they really blew it by not going play action there. And that's about it. And if it comes down in the draft, I think I'd want a defensive guy there to stop Dallas' running game. That's all. Somebody up the middle there yet.
All right, Joe. Thank you. Well, what matters, too, Joe, is what they do in free agency. You know? I mean, I could give an answer now of what I think the team should do, but if they go out there and they, you know, in free agency, bring in some monster offensive lineman, are you going to go spend the first round picking an offensive lineman again? I think the chances go down. What if they go out there and they bring in a huge defensive end, their defensive tackle in free agency? Well, you know, you're probably not going to pick one of those in the draft. So, we'll see. We got to wait until we see what the roster looks like when we get to draft time. There's still a lot of time to go. Final call of the show is my man Jerry down in Florida. Jerry, what's going on?
Hey, John, good afternoon. First of all, I just want to give my condolences to the Mara family.
Thank you, Jerry.
And I have a comment to make, but first let me say that despite the fact that you and Lance were talking about me earlier in the year and asking why it is that I hadn't called in.
Yeah, Jerry, where you been?
I have to tell you that the reason why I haven't called in is because basically I haven't had anything to add to your analysis and Lance's analysis of what's going on in football, and I just didn't have anything cogent to say.
See now you're just buttering me up, Jerry.
No, I'm telling you the truth.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
My wife would say, how come you haven't called in? I said, because I really don't have anything to add. But I do have something to say about what just happened in the Super Bowl.
Sure, what do you got, Jerry?
It's been 39 years that I've had to wait since the Giants have been displaced as being the owners of the worst play in football. Not since Bob Gibson, the offensive coordinator for John McVay, called a handoff to Larry Zonka with seconds left in the game when a kneel down would have sealed a victory of 17-12. And yet it became known as the fumble in New York and the miracle of the Meadowlands in Philly. And that led to George Young coming to the New York Giants as the general manager from the Dolphins. And it led to a turnaround in the fortunes of the Giants. So my comment is it'll be interesting to see if and how this affects situational football calls in the future.
I think that's very interesting, Jerry. And that's actually a very good comparison. And it's funny, that's the first person I've heard bring that comparison up, and I think it is very interesting. And look, I don't get why they didn't run the football. It didn't make a lot of sense. I get the explanation. But you know what? I think sometimes what coaches do, they'll get in their heads where they have the formula. Well, if they have this personnel, we have this personnel, that means you have to throw it in that spot. But at the end of the game, with that much time left, don't you just want to put the ball in the guy's hands that's the best player on your team and let him make a play?
Well, that would make sense, except that the only thing that I can say is that I thought that what happened is football is basically a coach's game. The players, there's not a lot of difference between the best team and the worst team in football, but it's coaches that make a difference.
I think it's all
both, but
that's
this case, these guys sort of outmaneuvered one another. I thought that what happened was Pete Carroll expected that New England would call a timeout in order to preserve the time when he had 33 seconds left in the game.
Right.
And when they didn't, he was thinking, okay, well, we can run a play. We'll use up one play, and then we'll do a run. And he thought that they would call a timeout and that he would have everything set. The fact that they didn't call a timeout is what led to the events that took place, and I think that is really what happened in this case. But nonetheless, it would have made sense to just run the same play again because Marshawn Lynch had made 5 yards in the previous play. It looked like he was on the half-yard line. It looked like all he had to do was fall down or even, in fact, give it to Russell and let him run the ball.
Now, Jerry, help me out. And I'm not sure what the answer to this question is. Maybe one of these guys knows it that's in here doing the show with me. I'm not sure if the Seahawks changed their personnel between the first and second down plays. Do they leave the same guys on the field, or do they switch guys in and out after that first down play?
No, during that first down play, as far as I can tell, I didn't see that, and I can't really answer that question.
I'm not sure. I got to look at that.
That they just ran Marshawn Lynch. He just got to the half-yard line. You would have expected him to just run the same play again.
Right.
And, in fact, it reminded me of what happened when the Giants were in the same situation and they had the running back falling into the end zone saying, don't score, don't score, don't leave him any time. And it seemed to me that that's what the thinking was, but it was not articulated very well by Pete Carroll, and I think he got lost in his own thinking.
I think that's probably true. It was great to hear from you, Jerry. Don't be a stranger.
Well, if I have something cogent to contribute, I will. But otherwise, I will sit and enjoy and listen to what you have to say.
See, Jerry, here's the problem.
You hit it right on.
You are way too – you're looking forward to 2016 already. You're trying to get your ballot ready. You're trying to figure out who's running. And I think it's really taking up a lot of your mental activity.
Well, we'll see. Anyway.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, take care.
Take it easy, my friend.
Right, bye now.
A lot of fun, folks. This was a lot of fun. You guys did a great job on the phones. Great job on Twitter. I didn't get to any of your tweets because the phones are so busy. I'm going to try to answer them after the show. Appreciate you joining me. We'll be back with you tomorrow at noon on Giants.com for more Big Blue Kickoff Live. Survive the ice and snow. We'll see you tomorrow.
Well, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35-30.
Want to get no punch.
Touchdown, Giants!